Hello and welcome to the 41st episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast.
Oh, my age. That's my age.
We put the fun in fostering and the happiness in adoption.
Okay. Oh, well, I've probably been on the Arrow Grey or something.
Yeah, it's taken me all week to work that one out. Been chuckling to myself. Yes. Well, no, seriously, hello and welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. And we're very excited this week, aren't we, Scott? Why are we excited?
Because I'm going to Edinburgh tomorrow.
No, we're not excited. We're excited because we've got a guest, haven't we?
Oh, yes.
That's
yes.
Terrible.
We've got a friend of the show.
We should get...
I don't know if she likes being called friend of the show, actually. She probably hates.
Shall we revisit that at the end of the show?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe she might change her views on that. So, yes. We've got Becky.
Hello.
A.K.A.
Suddenly
Mummy. Hello, Becky. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you all?
I can speak for myself and say I'm in rude health. Unlike Scott. Who's just getting over dengue fever, or some such that he developed in Cambridgeshire.
Well, thank you. Yes. That's probably actually the same symptoms.
Probably exactly.
Actually,
it's
more like the Black Death.
The Black Death that he developed. I've got lots of things I'd like to talk to you about today, and I've got lots of questions and lots of thoughts and ideas. And there's a few things, but the first thing is, I have realised, Becky, that you have not been blogging in as much as you have been blogging. What's all that about?
I know. I'm just super lazy. No, it's not. I mean, I am super lazy. Yeah, that's true. But no, it's not entirely that. It's partly because I feel like I have less to say. I think as time goes on, I feel I have less to say and I get more reticent. The more time goes on, I get more reticent about telling people details of what's happening in our lives, I think, and also I've acquired this new and strange thing. I've got this boyfriend.
A friend who's a boy.
Yeah, and do you know what? That takes up a lot of time. It turns out you have to like be attentive. You have to have conversations. You have to like make time to like you know. And apparently,
laugh at the jokes.
Yes, lots of laughing at jokes and things. And apparently it's considered bad manners to invite someone around to your house and then just sit there with your computer on your knee all night writing a blog.
Yeah, you do that after 10 years of marriage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, in a little while, that's probably going to be okay again. But right now, that's not really considered. It's considered the dumb thing.
Yeah. So after this first flush of young love, can we anticipate you returning?
45.
But we can track your relationship progress through the frequency of your blogs, can't we?
Yes, when they become weekly again, you'll know we settle down into a kind of middle-age routine.
Yeah, the humdrum
much
existence.
Like I imagine. Yeah.
Well, that's really encouraging.
This may be a really personal question, but being that little bit older and having two children and starting that. Well, I mean beyond 20, you know, because let's face it, you're not 21, are you?
I'm not 20, no.
Stop digging, Scott.
It's my birthday soon. Yeah. And I'm going to be 45.
You don't look it.
No, you don't look it.
Thank you.
Does it feel, because you must have relationships before kids and all that sort of stuff, and does it feel different? As in, is it like really exciting and, you know, like that young, you know, when you were in your teens or your early 20s, when you embarked on a new relationship and it was all exciting and lovely and, you know, and you were less kind of in your adopter's brain and foster carer's brain.
Where are you going with this?
No, I'm asking the question. I'm asking about it. I mean, you and I are never going to know what it's like to have a new relationship, are we? So, you know, at your age, you're much older than me. But yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I just in my brain, I'm just wondering what must it be like to be a parent,
it's like
an adopted parent, foster carer, have a job, blah, all that sort of stuff, and then start on a new relationship.
You What's can't like, ask you this. You can't
what
ask
it's
you
like.
This.
You
don't
you.
Have
no,
to answer these questions.
Like. No, it's fine. I can answer it because it's hilarious. So it's like our first date, which is set up for me because this is a person my friend has introduced me to. Our first date was we went to a restaurant with some friends and that was fine. Our second date, because the boyfriend already knows my children because he volunteers at the drama group that my son goes to, our second date, we took the children to the cinema to see some film or other. I have no idea because I had to leave the cinema about 27 times to take the children to the toilet and to take the children, blah, 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 blah. And then
fare.
We had some lunch during which I spent the entire time trying to stop food being thrown about. Our third date, I couldn't get babysitted then for about 3 weeks, so we didn't have a date for absolutely ages. And in the end, I just said, do you just want to come over and get a takeaway? Because we might as well just accept the fact that this is what it's going to be like. So by the time we had our third date, I had added a third child to the house, and we were fostering the little boy I'm fostering now. Yes, that was fun. Yeah. And during that third date, he vomited 4 times, and I had to keep going upstairs and changing the bed. And when I said goodbye to my date at the door at the end of the night, after I turned around, I found a big streak of vomit down my leg, trouser leg. That was good. So
this is gold.
So that is this is this I'm is quite marking on a relationship. And also, you need to keep having conversations with him about. Do you want to read this book about why can't my child behave? Do you want to read this book about the secrets of adoptive parenting? Do you want to read this book and doing all of that? As well, he's a school governor in 2 schools. So I'm like, I've read this new legislation. Have you seen this thing about virtual school?
Oh, that's riveting conversation.
Oh, I'm boring him to death.
Oh, wow. And he's still there.
Yeah.
And we're still in a relationship.
My
it's
goodness.
Have you...
Well, no, that, so it's I'm... not... Well, yes, it's absolutely lovely. It is lovely in a lot of ways. For instance, today, I had to take one of the children to a hospital appointment, and we had... The trip home was 12 miles, and it ended up taking us 2 hours. And my other child had to be picked up by 5 o'clock, and we missed that deadline by an hour. And I was able to phone a person and say, can you pick up the other child at 5 o'clock? And I'll be honest, things like that are revolutionary for us. Like, oh, goodness, I've nearly run out of nappies. Texts a person, can you fetch some nappies on your way over? It's amazing. Yeah. Like, I can run out of things now, which I could never do before, which is nice. Yeah. I mean, there's more to it than shopping and general court chores.
Yeah. And if he's a good boy, you let him watch you write a blog. Come round tonight and watch me write an interesting blog.
If you bring me nappies, I'll let you watch me typing on my computer. Yeah. To be fair, though, I'm not going to, you know, he also does a fair amount of that. He's got some job with IT that I don't understand. He's explained it about 1,000 times. I've still got no idea what he does for a living. But I will tell you that in the local elections recently, when at the count, when they have that projected image with the map of the local area and all the little wards and all the different colours pop up when it changes, he was responsible for that.
Yeah. Oh, so he's, he's got, he's got skills.
He's got skills.
He's got skills.
Yeah, he's got skills.
Don't in any way appreciate properly.
So in other words, then, I'm really pleased I'm not embarking on any form of new relationship.
Yeah, you've sold that.
Because it sounds like damned hard work. It sounds like damned hard work. That's what I say.
Yeah. But it's a shame, isn't it? Because you were held up as the poster woman for single adopters. And now you've been knocked well and truly off that perch, haven't you?
I know. Well, what can I say? I've just gone over to the other side.
Yeah.
I've been single for such a long time that if I confess how long here, people will send me pitying postcards. So Scott says, you must have had a relationship before you're an adoptive parent.
Probably not.
I know, I have to. Yeah, I'm sure I have.
I was just really interested in that because I think, you know, obviously couples have birth children and then they may separate, divorce and stuff like that. And it's a little, it must be a very similar thing, but quite different as well in terms of explaining your children. So I was just really interested in that, really.
Yeah.
And we, my son has had quite a lot of conversations with me in the past about why he doesn't have a daddy and can he have a daddy and can that random person over there be his daddy and that thing. And so I think there is in our house a strong sense of the need to manage the expectations of what's right. happening.
Yeah.
Because obviously, oh, here's this guy hanging around and it's like I'm 2 months into a relationship and my son's already drawing pictures of us all together with like my daddy. you know, and like working it out. If you get married, will you be my daddy? And it's like, oh, it's been 8 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm not really ready for that conversation.
No.
So he must be quite robust. As an individual, is he quite robust then? Does he? I mean, because if we were good questioners, we'd be able to ask you some really insightful questions about that. But we're not that good. So I don't really want to delve and you lay out your whole life before us, unless you want to lay it out. That's fine.
Oh, no. You can delve a bit.
Yeah.
You didn't want me asking the question. You told me to stop asking.
Okay, I'll stop asking.
Oh my days, see?
So it's a fledgling romance and we'll watch this space. Shall we say that? Is that a good way? Because I'm... Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Will you come back in 6 months and tell us how it's going?
Yeah.
And if we need to buy hats.
Yeah.
You'll definitely be the first to know. Excellent. If hats need to be purchased.
Thank you. But you raised some interesting questions because I was wanting to talk to you about blogging in general and... something Scott said the other week on that Twitter about oversharing and just conscious that people are sharing lots of their lives and stuff. And you talked about reticence and about sharing your life on blogs. So is that something that's grown or is it a recent sort of feeling?
I have always been a bit circumspect because my blog has always been read by people that know me in real life.
Yeah.
So I've always known that people that know me in real life are reading this, people that are related to us, people that are friends of us. And I am not happy for some things to be broadly shared because they will see my children on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah.
And they don't need to know some things. Excuse me. So I don't think I have general rules that I think everybody should do this or everybody should not do that. I think people are going to have to do what they feel they need, but there are circumstances that I know that people that know us read this and I want to present our family, not in a lying way, but I just don't want to wash our dirty linen in public in a way that would humiliate my child because they will read that and then they will see him and that I'm not comfortable with that. So that's one thing.
Can I ask a question about that? But is that not a little frustrating? Because I am probably in a similar situation to you. But I found it a little frustrating because there are times when I go, I just want to spill this onto the page and put it out there and walk away from it and kind of get it off my chest. But I know I can't because it's...
Yeah.
So I'm caught in that tension and I'm always conscious of oversharing but then making dissatisfying blogs.
I could write, as I'm sure we all could, 50 blogs about CPV. I could write loads of blogs about that. I don't write any blogs about that. So, yeah, sometimes I think, sometimes I think, God, I'd love to get this out there and just cathartically process it all in writing.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's just not going to be done that way. I think occasionally I might share a little bit more on a support group page, maybe, but in general, most of the extremely interesting things, shall we call them, that occur, it's either just in our family or it's just between our family and the one or two people that we share that with that are close to us that support us with it, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it really.
But I don't think that's a rule that everyone should follow. It's just I'm not saying that's who we should be. That's just how it works for us, really.
But you're definitely one of the people in like a landscape blogger. In my head, there's a few kind of landscape bloggers who really capture a lot of stuff, and you inhabit a unique space with your fostering and adoption and your singleness. There's no one else quite like you, so that's why I think that you are. You know, I'm really interested in your opinion because I think your blogs, of all the blogs I read, yours are one of those that I really feel like catches my views and perspectives, and you you know, I don't want to butter you up. Maybe I have done buttered you up, but
blowing smoke. He's blowing
yeah,
smoke.
Blowing smoke. Yeah, I shouldn't do that. But I mean, I like it. Do you read a lot of blogs?
No.
I do. I don't read a lot. I don't know what you, I don't know how you define a lot. I don't spend hours reading people's blogs, but I do read people's blogs. And I particularly, I don't read every blog that comes my way. I don't have particular people who I read every blog they ever write.
Apart from Scott.
There isn't time. Yeah, obviously. Because he only writes two a year, so it's not so difficult.
Exactly. And the fact you know that means you do read them.
Yeah, I do. There are some people, I will read them. I think I'm just qualifying this by saying that I work a lot in the evenings for a long time. But I do. And there are some people, but I tend to more likely read things if something about the subject matter of what the blog is catches my eye.
Yeah.
Really. And I think I go through phases in reading blogs that are people's descriptions of their family lives. Not because I don't think those things should be shared or I don't want to read them, but there are sometimes in our situation where I can't read other people's difficult things. Our difficult things are enough and I can't manage it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even sometimes I feel like I sometimes see things on Twitter or I see things on social media and feel like, oh, I should be like piling in with the support here. Mm-hmm. But I've got nothing. Sometimes
the,
you just
the
feel
tank
like
is empty.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to say. This is awful what's happening to you. But I'm so on the floor as well that like, oh, I don't know what to really do with that now. And so sometimes I do just go away a little bit and maybe don't participate. And then other times I feel full of, I can really join in and I can really say things that might hopefully be helpful and things like that. But so that's how it is with blogs really. I think if it's people's personal story blogs, I'm sometimes in more of a better frame of mind to read those than others. Sometimes I just can't manage it if people are really struggling. I have to. Yeah. Which sounds awful, doesn't it? It just sounds awful.
No, it doesn't.
I just can't cope.
Personally, I think that's actually reality because, you know, I'm the same. I try and read as many as come my way. But like you say, unless it's a subject matter that kind of interests me, because let's face it, if you were just reading blogs on adoption, you'd probably lose interest in them quite quickly. And there's so many different bloggers, I guess, for adoption, so it's about the subject matter. But it's interesting when the place I was in when I made the comment about oversharing, because I've done it quite, you know, regularly. I think the difference is the anonymity of some of the kind of people that perhaps you know can overshare because they're in that place where they can do that. I can't do that. I can't, you know, I took myself off every Facebook group going because I just found that my time, you know, the feed, what's it called, timeline on Facebook was just full of trauma, full of everybody's trauma, and it just got to me.
Yeah.
And then the same Twitter the last couple of weeks, well, the week before last, actually, I was off for a couple of weeks off Twitter because of the same thing. So it's really... I was trying not to do this. I'm going to have to go on mute. So I said,
"No, I'm waving. I'm waving at the child. Hello."
A small child has come into the room.
Oh, it's
an
lovely.
An Ewok.
That was a beautiful moment.
Love you.
Oh,
sweet.
Oh. One day we could be just like you, Scott.
Where was I? He's put me off now. I'm just conscious that as a person who's on Twitter with my real name, that sometimes I do mention things that happen, but not the kind of extremes. And you were talking there about, you know, being able to talk about CPV till the cows come home, Becky, in blogs and stuff like that, but you don't because you've made that choice. And I didn't do that for so long. And, you know, things like sharing, you know, recently more about my oldest son moving out, that's factual information that actually I want to share with people to, in the hope that they get something out of it. But it's not the negatives. I'm trying to keep it as positive as possible without giving too much about, you know, he's moved into this flat and this is his address if everybody wants to send a card kind of thing, you know, because that would just be ridiculous. But I just feel that social media has come a place for some to overshare, and in actual fact, it can be draining on people reading it. Yeah. Because I go onto Twitter for some light kind of relief from life, and I'm finding that that's starting to be full of kind of trauma as well, which, you know, like you, I want to be able to help everybody, of course I do, because that's what we do, because we've got that empathy, haven't we, and we're living that life as well. But it's really difficult sometimes, because actually you're living your own stuff as well, and it's really difficult to then kind of try and support people who are in, you know, who are kind of going to that extreme.
I think on Twitter, what I see is that people cycle in and out of needing support and being supportive. And I think I would never want to be, you know, as a single parent, as a single adoptive parent. But anyway, since I am.
Officially you are.
Just on a legal level.
Currently. Yeah. You know, you do sometimes, you know, the need to just tell someone the ridiculous thing that just occurred. Like on Saturday morning, my 7-year-old son took a pair of kitchen scissors and cut off my 3-year-old daughter's entire plait of hair.
Oh.
That's terrible.
It was quite terrible.
That's not
and
funny.
You know,
it's just...
It is now, but what, cried. No. I absolutely was like, what am I with?
Oh.
And, which is not particularly an adoption thing, I know that, but I was straight on Facebook. Straight on Facebook in the adoption group. Oh my word, my son did this! Just because sometimes you just have to tell somebody, and sometimes it's a thing like that that is like common to a lot of families and might later be funny, but sometimes it's not, and I would never want to be the kind of social media police suggesting to people that they should feel bad for sharing the things that, and I don't think anyone wants to be that.
No.
And I think then for the rest of us as users of social media, we can use our choice to cycle in and out of what we listen to and what we read and how much we can contribute and not contribute. And I think that's part of our self-care, that sometimes, I think everybody would accept this. I don't think there's anyone that wouldn't accept that. Sometimes for part of our self-care, we just need to back off a little bit from all the trauma.
Yeah.
I can't even watch, like, a dramatic TV programme.
Oh.
I can't watch... I mean, Happy Valley. No. I can't watch any programme like that. Honestly, since I've become a parent, I'm incapable of watching TV programmes that have got too much traumatic...
Yeah.
And it never bothered me before, but I just feel like there's enough drama in my own life now. I don't need it on my TV.
You don't need to add into
that.
I put
the telly on at night. I want to watch a rerun of QI that I've already seen and that won't challenge me at all. Do you know what I mean? I just need something, you know. And I think we all get to that place, don't we, sometimes, where we just say, I'm just going to just back off from this a little bit because I need to just gather myself. And then at another time, we'll go in and somebody else will be taking a break. And I think it probably works out in the end.
Yeah, I got added into requested to be added into a Facebook group. It's not adoption related. It's around challenging behaviour in children from special needs, and it is just the most harrowing Facebook group. It knocks adoption and fostering into a hat. It is just outrageous, and I keep it there, but it is overwhelming, and it really gives me a sense of perspective. Because I think I have not got it this bad. I've never had, some of the stories are just outrageous. But what I do find odd is that, because Paula is in some Facebook groups that I'm part of as well. There's one specific one. I'm not going to name it because I look in it and I see that she's spilt all the beans about the family into that group because it's a very safe group.
Yeah.
And I think,
I've been in that group.
Have you been in that group? She's totally, and I go, oh. There's me portraying this image of this together, or, you know, this coping, and she's telling all these mad things that have happened.
You should see the post that she puts about you and then blocks you from seeing them. Honestly, I mean, we know everything about you, Al.
Literally everything. I think you think you're both in that group. Well, that's interesting. Well, I feel that there's kind of, social media has its, like, character. Any given moment has its own personality and character, doesn't there? And I feel like we're at a peculiar time that I've never felt like this before. I don't feel particularly engaged with it. And I'm reading. I don't know whether that's because I've got less time. I'm, you know, I'm so I kind of just pick up stuff. But I'm uncomfortable with some of the voices that are out there, and but also you see new voices coming in and old voices moving back and new experiences. And I'm conscious as well that it's 5 years since we adopted, and I'm sort out of the loop of preparation, and there's been such a turnover in context. You know, the regional adoption agencies, and even look back 5 years, and which is probably when we all did our last prep. Did you do prep 5 or 6 years ago? And I think that has the
11.
11. It wasn't 11 years ago. Did you not do it more recently than that?
Shh.
Awkward conversation. But well, I did
prepare to foster 4 years ago, but not the adoption one.
All right. I just feel like that I wonder how relevant my voice is anymore in relation to some of those newer voices. Anywho. Anywho, that was a boring point, wasn't it? Thoroughly miserable.
Yeah, it was. It makes you sound quite miserable, actually, because I think that everybody... I mean, I know what you're saying about, you know, some of the voices and what have you, but actually the one thing that I always hear about... adopters who've been doing it for a while is that, well, this is going to sound wrong, but this is what I hear, and it's not me saying this, this is other people saying this, people like yourself, people like Becky, people like me, people like even people that we have never spoken to on this podcast, like Mrs. Jellies, and you know, all those kind of people, they are the people that new adopters are looking to for that kind of
wisdom.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's because a terrifying thought.
Yeah, we're doomed. doomed.
But that is true. And I feel like that because actually, have we got people that we can refer to who've, you know, I talk to Al a lot about having a 19-year-old because you've had a 19-year-old, Al, who's adopted. I don't have any other reference point to be able to do that. It's really difficult. Mm. And that's probably not the best example to use. Oh, cool.
I am in uncharted territory today. I am in uncharted territory.
Yeah, I know you are. But that's the point. We don't have that to look to.
Yeah.
I don't think, because nobody... Yes, people have gone through it, but they don't use social media because their children are much, much older now, or they have got to that point of complete independence or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
but we just don't have that. So people are looking to us, and that's new to us as well, because we're like, are we relevant as adoptive parents? I think we are, actually.
Yeah, I think so.
This is a lot longer than everybody thought it was going to be. You know, as in, you know, we know it's lifelong now, but actually, 11 years ago, you know, I hoped that they would reach independence at the age of 19, 20, 21, whatever the norm is in terms of, you know, families
and live their lives.
And that's not going to happen for us. So, you know, it's different now. It is different.
I think what everybody needs, what every adopter needs, is to have someone to speak to who's a couple of steps ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My kids are 7 and 3. So to be honest, I don't really want to hear an awful lot about, I really don't want to hear sometimes about the terrible things that your teenagers have done. And I don't want to have conversations where I say, gosh, my 7-year-old did this, and someone else says, wait till they're 17 and then they'll really ruin your life.
If I can say it, my teenagers years were great for most of my children. 20s, killing me.
Why are you doing that? Don't say that to me. But this is the thing, if you have children, if you're doing adoption prep, you want to speak to a person that a year ago did adoption prep.
Yeah.
But if your kids are just becoming teenagers, you want to speak to someone whose kids are older teenagers. Exactly. So every voice is relevant, isn't it? Yeah. Because there's always somebody who's about to be what you've just been.
Yeah, exactly.
And therefore, you know, you can share what you know. There's no experts. None of us are experts. We've all, well, I mean, maybe Al, you've done it 6 times, but like, you know, you only parent, you don't parent that many times. If somebody'd only done 6 heart surgeries, you wouldn't call them an expert.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, most of us have parented 1, 2, 3 kids. We're not experts, but we can just pass on
tips and tricks.
What we know.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you my story about my 18-year-old when we were in France at the weekend, just in case, Becky, because I know that you go to France a lot, and when your son's 19, you're in for it, mate, I tell you.
Is it a bohemian experience? No.
Oh, it's I. It's interesting. I'll tell you when we've stopped recording.
Oh, you can't. That's really unfair. That's but.
No, I know, but you can't overshare.
No,
you
exactly.
mustn't overshare.
Exactly. Not oversharing. There you go. Case in point.
If we were an American podcast, we could do a Patreon where we could have special content for people who pay, where we could really tell all our stories and people would have to pay. But we're not, so we won't.
No, we're not. No, we're not sponsored. We're independent. Absolutely
independent. Yeah. But I remembered why with my Beds sponsor podcast.
Yes, you said about this.
It dawned on me because it realised that people listen to podcasts while they're going to sleep and they're all laid in bed, and then someone says, and the Fostering Adoption podcast is sponsored by Super Sleeping Double Mattresses for all your super sleeping needs. And then it subconsciously goes in. You wake up next morning and buy one.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Because you've fallen asleep listening to the most boring podcast in the world. Yeah.
It's the joggers I worry about that are falling asleep and waking up.
Yeah, exactly.
Ditches.
I still think that we should be sponsored by bourbon. That's the biscuits, not the drink.
Yeah, we'll work on that. Right, we've done 30 minutes, and that was just the preamble to the main show, which is Becky White.
Have we started recording? I thought we were just chatting generally. Just I didn't realise.
Well, I'll tell you this story. About 3 years ago, this is a lead-in to Becky. About 3 years ago, these people who get things for free, I thought, as I get older, I want to be one of those people. So I just wrote to a publisher and I said, I've got a blog, and at least 7 or 8 people read it every month. What's the chances of getting books to review? And they went, absolutely. So they just sent me books. And actually, I requested books and they sent me. And then I realised it was the worst thing in the world, because you get sucked into this really bizarre psychological trap of thinking, but it was a free book, so I've got to give a nice review because the nice people gave me the nice book. It's totally messed up my head. And there's been some reviews where I've had to really dance around the truth. I've tried to be honest, but the one that I really hated was the one about adoption in the movies. I really didn't like that book. And if Jessica Kingsley are reading, I'm really sorry. But it was a bit too American for me. But maybe I'm a cynic. But anyway, Becky, I asked you to read some of the books that I'd requested. So, Becky, because as you know...
A little jingle over this to say, Becky's book review.
It's Becky. It's books. She loves books.
And we'll do it in the right accent for you.
Right then, let's have a look at this book then, right? Right. Yes, you did. You sent me 2 books about 10 years ago. And I've read them yesterday.
Excellent.
So we'll do... So one of them was... People will have read this one before. It's Life Storybooks for Adopted and Fostered Children, A Family-Friendly Approach by Joy Rees. But this is a second edition of a book that was originally published in 2009.
What colour is
the book?
I
think that it's a blue book.
Oh.
And is this part of the review that you need to know the colour?
Well,
and
it helps.
Got some yellow and white writing on and a picture of a book with some cut-out people stood on it.
Oh. So
for the listener, I'm now displaying the cover to the other 2 people on the podcast. You all can't see that.
No.
Because you can't remember our names, obviously.
No. The other 2 people on the podcast. You can call me Al.
These random men. I'm displaying it to these random men that I'm speaking to on the internet.
So what is the book? Was it a good book? Yes or no?
Yes.
Right. So on to the next item. No. What is it about a book about life story work? This is terrible.
Yeah, it's not about life story work in general. It's just about the books. It's just about life story books, and it gives a bit of a rationale for how you should do them and why you should do them like that. So I think it's fairly common now that local authorities that are preparing these will do the sequence present, past, present, future, rather than starting with you were born in this hospital and this was your first moment and all of that. They start with where you are now. And she gives a really good rationale for doing that, why you should do that, and how you can use the way you write the book to encourage attachments with the new adoptive family and encourage belonging in that. And there's a couple of things. I think when I read books telling you how to write life story books, the main feeling that I have is one of deep regret that my own child's, and I say child singular because one of my children has never received one, but the one that we have is absolutely abysmal
Can you say that?
I've just said it.
Oh, excellent.
Well, let's put it this way. It refers to his new mummy and daddy. In not one, but several places. Well, I've been a single adopter for the whole time.
Maybe the new mum was coming when they're old.
It was prophetic.
You can't show a kid that, though, can you? It's just...
I mean, we're laughing, but if you want to start a Twitter storm, just put out there, how are people doing with their life storybooks and literally the vitriol and the passions that will be risen? To be honest with you, because I've not even looked at ours in ages because they're so duff, what... You talked about the present, past, future. I've never heard of that model at all. So is that...
I think in the past there's been there's been a way of writing life storybooks where you start with, you do it chronologically through the child's life. You were born here, this was your first family, all these awful things happen, and now you live with these new people, the end.
Yeah.
And what Joy Reese is saying is, you don't do that. That doesn't give the child a sense of being anchored whatsoever. What you do is you start in the present. This is you now. These are the people you live with. This is your house. This is your dog. These are the things you like doing. Da, 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 da. And then you move on to the past. And then you move back to the present. And then you put in some hopes for the future. So that you're giving that, you're sandwiching the events of the past with the kind of current situation. You're sandwiching it with the security of you belong in this family and this is where you are now. And she's very much looking at life storybooks as a way of not only helping to explain to a child what has happened to them, but helping them to fit that in with what is happening to them now, so that this help them to have that bond, have that sense of security and safety in the family that they're currently in. Scott's just done a weird thing with his phone, which has really freaked me out.
It's a bit
creepy. That was good. So there were a couple of things that I found interesting in this. And one of the things was that, because I hear a lot of stories now about people getting life storybooks ages later than they thought they were going to get them, or than that I would expect them to be given. And one of the things she says is that adoptive parents should really be involved in this book a lot more than they have been. And that's why you shouldn't be getting your life storybook round about the time the child's placed with you. You should be getting it after the celebration hearing when the child's lived with you for a while, so that you can have opportunity to contribute to the life storybook, which is great in theory, but I don't know of any adoptive parent that's been meaningfully able to contribute to the child's life storybook beyond sending in a few pictures.
Well, we've had a couple of life storybooks, mainly because the two girls came, Flossie and Lottie came, and they got a life storybook, which was standard life story fair, spelling mistakes, pictures of where they, you know, names and addresses of where their parents lived. Scary things. And we complained and nothing happened. But then when Peanut came, their sister, we had this moment where we could say, if you're going to do one, why don't you do them all? And someone did come out and they were actually really good in their defence. And we talked through it. The only downside is that Flossie is black and all of the clip art of the children, it was of white children. But other than that, it's, you know, and but that's not good. But is this a book for professionals or is it for families?
I think it's been intended as a book for professionals, because I think it's intended that it will be the professional that writes the life storybook. But considering that, as in my case, so often the life storybooks are not quite of the perhaps quality or, you know, rigour that adoptive parents might want them to be, I certainly am redoing my son's, and we'll have to do one for my daughter since we're 18 months in and it's not arrived and I think it's never going to. So I think I'll have to do one for her from scratch. I think there are so many parents out there trying to redo the life storybook or trying to add something to the life storybook that sort of carries on the journey somewhat. Yeah. Or, you know, reword what's been written, or just in some way improve what's been written and make it more suitable for their child. Perhaps now they've got to know each other better. But I found it useful and think I'll be using it now to try and help me write my sons. There are two fully written out examples of the kind of writing you could put in them at the back. And they also, gives you a link on the internet for some more examples. And the only thing I think that I was a little bit unsure about how that would work for us was that she recommends that you write the life storybook in the third person. So you use the child's name. So like, this is Jim. Jim lives in his house with his mummy and dad or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was just like trying to imagine going through my son's life storybook. with it being in the third person with his name through like that. She does give a reason for that, which I can't fully remember right now. But then in the example she gives, one of them is done like that with the child's name, but the other one's done you were born, you did this, you did that, which is more how I would have done it. So I don't think it's a deal breaker. But I did think that was an interesting, and I don't know how I would really manage with that, with doing that. But yeah, and it's not a long read. I read it in an afternoon, so
yeah, but
I think it's probably worth getting.
You're incredibly fast at reading.
I'm a bit of a speed reader, I will admit.
How much is the book?
I don't know, you sent it to me.
Yeah, free!
I literally do not know. There is no price on the back.
All right, I'm sure.
To be fair, Al, I think we should probably post links to the Sanders website so that people can look at it and say, oh, there's that book that Becky reviewed. And would you recommend Becky?
Yes, would you
recommend? Yes, I would. I've read two books on Life Story recently. On Life Story, one was more on Life Story work, and this one's more specific about the Life Story book. And I think it's probably just because I'm very interested in doing a Life Story book right now that probably this one on Life Story book has perhaps slightly appealed to me more than the other. But I think it's probably just because that I need to do that very quickly. But actually, nearly half the book is these reprints of example life. I'd say about half the book is example Life Story books, it's full texts that you can read, and then some appendices at the back of the kinds of questions that professionals should be asking the foster carers and the family about, what that kind of thing. Which actually, if you're often one of the questions that adoptive parents ask is, what kind of questions should we be asking the foster carer when we get to meet the foster carer? Yeah. So that's a useful list. There's like a 4-page list in the back of things that you can ask to help you with the Life Story book. I should imagine a lot of that would be useful guide to help you decide what to ask.
So it's a
foster
thumbs
care
up.
As an adoptive parent. It's a thumbs up, I think.
What, reminders of the title?
It is called Life Story Books for Adopted and Fostered Children, and it's Joy Rees.
Joy Rees. Excellent. Well, that was...
fabulous.
That felt like proper podcasting. That really did.
You like that?
Yeah.
Except when Al interrupts all the time, but, you know, you can...
Oh, yeah. That old chestnut. Honestly, there's so many better podcasts out there than this, where they're so slick and so professional, and they're just so sensible. And we just seem to be failing dismally on that.
We're very grateful for our listeners, so, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Your mum,
my
mum.
Yes, don't imply that your listeners are settling for anything less than the best.
Exactly.
It's a veiled insult if you're not careful.
This is guerrilla podcasting. Or something. I don't know what that means. Tell me about the second book. Because you made me laugh before we started recording. You made me laugh about the second book, and I'm hoping to laugh again.
Yeah, because we want your honest review of this one as well.
Yeah, share the truth.
Right. Thank you for that. Okay. I'm going to be honest, because when I opened the packet on this book and saw that the title was All You Need Is Love, I wanted to put it in the bin, because I... it's just an adoptive parents, and I guess it's a foster care or adoptive parent thing, that you just want to scream back, no, it isn't, love isn't all you need, love is not enough. But that was before I understood what the book was about. So once I've understood what the book's trying to do, the title makes more sense. So what this is a book for children. It's a book for children called All You Need Is Love, Celebrating Families of All Shapes and Sizes. So it's a book for children, and each double page is a poem and a little cartoony picture, and each double page celebrates a different kind of family.
Right.
So it covers all kinds of diverse family setups, which makes it's a good thing to be doing, I think. You know what I mean? I think the book is trying to do a good thing here. It's trying to introduce children to
diversity.
Just a range of different kinds of diversity. So,
Are there different kinds of families? Is that a thing?
Ask Tris, he'll tell you.
Oh, okay.
Ask your husband.
So there's a poem about a family where the child in the family has Down syndrome. There's a foster family. There's same-sex parent families. There's a family where one of the parents is poorly and disabled. There's a transgender setup. There's an adoption family. There's people who live with the grandparents. It's all covered in here.
Who's the book? I mean, you said it's a children's book, but...
it's aimed at children.
Right.
It's okay. Aimed at children, yeah. So, I mean, it's the kind of... You could see it being used in a school classroom, actually.
Right.
Or at home. My thing with it is, I'm not a massive fan of rhyming poetry. And it's every page is a rhyming poem.
Whoa, hang on. It's the implication being that there's poems that don't rhyme. Tell me it's not true.
I'm sorry to break this to you.
What the hell?
Some poetry doesn't rhyme. I know.
Good grief, woman.
So, it's not entirely, can I use the phrase, not my cup of tea? It's not really my cup of tea.
Yes.
But I like what it's trying to do. It will be some people's cup of tea.
Right.
So I'm not, you shouldn't, because it's not my cup of tea doesn't mean you shouldn't buy it. Right. I don't mean that.
Who should buy it then? Who should buy it?
Well, I could say, I think I could see it in a primary classroom, to be honest.
Right.
I really think I could see it in a setting like that. Or really anywhere, anybody where you want to help your children to understand that there is families come in all different kinds of shapes and sizes. And I think it does do that, to be fair. It does introduce a lot of different concepts of different kinds of families. I think some of the poems explain those families better than other of the poems do. Some of the poems introduce this type of family, and you don't really learn much about it, whereas others of them go into a bit more depth about why that family is different or why that family is like the way it is or whatever, which are helpful, I think. And then the last one is about your family. And it also comes with just a few pages of suggestions of activities that adults could do with their children after reading the story, and that's by Pookie Nightsmith, which some people might know from Twitter.
I remember the name.
Yeah.
Oh, you would remember the name.
Yes, you would. That all sounds really good. So that is that a thumbs? What are we going to do? Thumbs up, thumbs sideways, thumbs down?
Or I think it's a thumbs up for what it's trying to do. And I think if you like cheerful, upbeat, rhyming poetry, you should probably buy the book.
All right.
Me, cool. I'm not a very cheerful person, so.
misery.
The pictures misery. Sweet pictures in it. I'm a bit of a misery, but yeah.
I have to say I'm slightly intrigued by that, but I have a feeling that those weren't the books I sent you.
Completely the books you sent me.
Right.
What do you think you sent me?
I don't know. I send people lots of things. It's just one of my hobbies.
Oh, I know that the books you sent me because I got them out of the packet, looked at the front cover of the All You Need Is Love one, and then put them both on the counter and didn't look at them for about 3 months.
All right,
because I was irritated by the title. But I'm pretty sure, unless I've been reviewing the wrong books for other publications I review books for.
There's a fair...
I'm pretty sure someone would have told me.
No, that's fine. Oh, I'll have to have a think about where that book's gone. There was a book about teenagers. Was there?
Don't send me a book about teenagers.
No, that wouldn't make any sense.
Need that trauma in her life.
No. That would put your right off. Put your right off. Mm. Well, there you go. So that is that was you, and that was your reviews. Thank you very much for reading them. Because that.
Can I tell you what? I'm going to interrupt you as well because I want you to all know that Ali Redford's new book. Ali Redford wrote the Boy Who Built a Wall Around Himself,
mm-hmm.
and she's just available for pre-order now. Is the Mermaid Who Couldn't, and I've just had a copy of that for review. I can't review it for you because I've reviewed it elsewhere.
Where have you reviewed it for?
We really like that.
Who did you
review it for?
Tell me.
Reviewed it for Adoption Today.
Oh,
what's that?
Funny people.
Oh,
some small publication. Anyway, so I'm not going to give you a full review, but I am going to say I've read it. My three-year-old really likes it and keeps trying to rescue the character in it by getting her off the page with her fingers.
Oh, bless her.
And it's lovely. And do pre-order it.
Yeah. Well, while we're kind of promoting books, there's another one available at the minute.
Have you written a book?
That's just come out. No, I haven't. I would never write a book. My blogs are boring enough without actually having to write a book.
No, don't say that.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to find the details now, but basically David, who was on our Young Persons panel at the annual conference, he has written a book, and I haven't read it yet, but I've ordered it because I want to support him as the person that he is, because he was just such a fabulous bloke, and once I've read it, I'll let you have the link, and I'll probably do a little bit of a summary for the podcast on it as well.
Excellent. That's good news.
What's that called, Scott?
I can't remember.
This is where I now have to admit that I asked you a leading question, because I think it's called We Adopted Each Other.
I think it is, yeah. But I can't find the tweet. Today.
P for preparation.
Well, it's just because she promoted one, so I thought, well, as we're on that subject.
As we're doing that.
Stuff, exactly. I'm a bit sloppy, but to be fair, this is the first time that we've done a review, so we'll get there.
I've got another book that I'm going to get someone else to review maybe in the future as well, so that'll be exciting. The A to Z of Therapeutic Parenting by Sarah Nash I've got.
I've just bought that.
Have you? Oh, you should have said, man. I could have sent you a copy.
Oh, shall I tell you what? I bought it, and then I was offered a review copy like the next week.
Oh.
Do you want to review this? Well, yeah, but you know.
Bummer.
So, well, yeah.
There you go.
For what it's worth, I will be perfectly honest and tell you, I am not a reader in any way, shape, or form, and that book really has to pull me in from the first chapter for me to continue reading it. So those kinds of books, no offence to anybody who writes them, because I'm sure they're useful to lots, hundreds, thousands of people, but to me, I just can't find the time to spend reading them.
I was going to ask that question, because I thought, do you know what, I wonder how many people actually read these sort of books, because it would be the last thing in the world that I would ever do. Like you were saying about re-traumatizing yourself watching, you know, Murder, Death, Kill on the telly. The last thing I want to do, because reading is a pleasure, is to sit down and read a book about, you know, all of the, you know, that kind of stuff. Really struggle. It's not that I'm not interested, just find it really hard to access. That's why I asked you to do it, Becky.
I don't read a huge amount. I have just bought the A to Z of Therapeutic Parenting because of the format. It's an A to Z. So you don't actually have to read the whole book. You can just go and read the throwing a TV at your mum section, see what you're supposed to do when your child tries to throw a TV at you, which has happened in my house. Yeah. And I'm hoping there's a son cuts off daughter's entire hair section so I can go and find out what I'm supposed to do about that.
H for hair. So you can just... T for telly. It's a good toilet book, isn't it? If you'll excuse my crudeness, but it's the sort of book you can.
Honestly, that's why. So I bought it, like, because I don't have time or brain power to read a lot of books these days. They have to be. I thought that would be something I could dip into. And the other thing I occasionally do is I occasionally get out Sally Donovan's any of those to have a good old cry. I always have a big cry.
Really?
They make me cry. Yeah. Because they don't rhyme.
Oh, they do rhyme.
Because sometimes the rhymes are a little bit forced. No, not because of that.
I don't even know what that means.
I've done a lot of poems. I've done a lot of studying and teaching poetry. I'm sorry.
What's a forced rhyme?
Like, don't worry. It doesn't
matter. Cat and hat.
That's about my limit when it comes
to it. But sometimes I do find that reading books helps me to get back into a place of empathising with my child instead of being unbelievably frustrated at my child. I do find it sometimes helpful for that, because I just sometimes need reminding of why it's like it is. Yeah. And I can get onto a treadmill of being incredibly frustrated and incredibly sometimes overwhelmed. I'm massively overwhelmed by this, and I feel like I have nothing, and I can't see how things are going to go in our entire future because now we've reached a point where things are happening, and I'm just stood there like a rabbit in the headlights because so many things are happening so fast that I can't deal with all of them, and therefore I'm just dealing with none of them, and it's all going pear-shaped. And sometimes it does me good to just stop and have a little read of something that someone else has written. And I do find Sally D very good for this, to just switch back on my kind of empathy a little bit and just remind me that it's not the child that's doing this to me. It's trauma or it's whatever it is. Other than that, I think once you've read one book about attachment, you've pretty much read the books about attachment, haven't you, really?
Hush your mouth.
I know, can you really say that? But I'm like, because I will say that this Life Story Books for Adopted and Fostered Children by Joy Rees has got a really excellent section in the front about attachment. Nice and easy to understand. Well done, very good. But, you know, and it is good. I enjoyed that. I thought it was well done. But, you know, every book you pick up about adopted children's got a section about attachment. I sometimes skip over that chapter because I feel like I've read that chapter already.
Yeah.
10 or 100 times.
Yeah, I mean, I totally, yeah, I do agree with you, but I find that this is the best book I've ever read about attachment is called Raising Parents by Patricia Crittenden. And that develops the idea a bit further. It's the next step along. And I find that really helpful. But to be honest, I find it all just hard work reading that stuff. There's no story. If they did it in graphic novel form, I would just rattle through them, but I just can't. Sorry, I was joking. Scott doesn't understand.
No, but there's a gap in the market there.
Graphic novel. Yeah. Graphic novel, social work theory books. I could do that. Pictures of social work.
You, Al, have read a lot of dead, boring, Dullard Dishwater social work textbooks as well, haven't you, though? That we haven't been.
He's one of those Dullard Dishwater social work.
Well, that's probably tainted things for you.
Well, I got. When I was
he's read his own biography. It bored him.
I haven't read. Right. Sorry. It's not funny.
Apologize. Take it back. I take it back.
Well, I was really lucky because when I was on an adoption panel, they taught us, they put us on a speed reading course because we were getting 5 or 6 formees or PRs, whatever they are now, to read in 5 days, which is maybe like 10, 12 hours reading. And so they said, will you put you on a speed reading course? And I thought that would be great. And so they just taught us how to just suck information out of words. I mean, it's not reading for fun.
God. Didn't even know these courses were available because when I sat on the panel, I didn't get that blimmin' option.
It's fantastic because you can read different ways. So I can rattle through information, but there's no joy in it. It's just sucking out the stuff I need. It's like reading a Geoffrey Archer novel on a beach somewhere. Not that I've ever read a Geoffrey Archer novel on a beach.
I can see you're a real Geoffrey Archer man. You've always struck me as being a right Geoffrey Archer man.
Yeah, it's true blue all the way through me. That's just terrible.
Oh dear.
Right. We've chatted a lot about a lot of stuff. Scott, you are going away this weekend. Tell me where you're off to.
Well, I'm going away tomorrow, which is Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to Edinburgh to the FESD conference that's being held in Edinburgh. With Dr. Oh my God, I can never pronounce his surname. Mukherjee, I think it's. Apologies. And Lee Harvey Heath and loads of other speakers are going to be there. And I'm going to work officially. Work, he says with his fingers in there. And I shall also be doing a special podcast recording with 3 or 4 of the speakers.
Wow!
Yeah.
And it's this. We are independent. We definitely are independent podcast. However, I have been asked at work to if they can host it on their website as well, so that people can listen to it. So it'll be on the Adoption UK website as well as our own website, which is lovely of them. But it is an Adoption UK conference, and I offered to do that as part of a way to make it a little bit more accessible than just people who go to the conference. So we'll ask some really kind of direct questions of the interviewees. So that's what I'm doing this weekend.
Excellent. And
cool.
Is that it's an FASD? Well, what is FASD? Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing, isn't it? That's really more and more I talk to people, it's almost like epidemic proportions, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And one of the interesting things is doing workshops during the day after lunch, and there's 6 workshops, and you could choose which one you wanted to go into. And obviously, you know, if it was oversubscribed, you wouldn't be able to do it. But I chose the one that Dr. M, we'll call him, just for the sake of pronunciation.
That sounds reasonable.
Dr. M, because he's going to be talking about diagnosis of FASD. And the reason I'm going into that is because the question that I get asked all the time around FASD is, how do I get a diagnosis? And secondly, people who have tried to look into getting a diagnosis where there is no log of any alcohol misuse with birth parents, they're refused at the point of entry. So I'm really interested to hear how we can get through that, how we can go over that, because you know, I'm in a situation where I believe one of my children has FASD, but I'm unable to access that because there is nothing in the notes that would indicate that there was any alcohol misuse.
But even that's a misunderstanding, though, isn't it, of what FASD is?
Yeah.
Because the implication is that you've got to be a raving alcoholic and out of control with your alcohol consumption, but that's just not the case, is it?
And, but we focus so much on drug abuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, it should be both, actually. And what are, the, you know, I don't mean to be disrespectful because I try not to be to birth parents, but what are the chances if they're misusing drugs during pregnancy, what are the chances that they're misusing alcohol as well and cigarettes and, you know, all those, all the things that are bad for us.
In that lifestyle context.
It's quite high. It's really high, actually. And I just, so I'm really interested in that. So it'll be really interesting. I'll kind of try and do a little bit of a review. And it'll be in the next edition of Adoption Today as well. So there'll be interviews.
I think that'd be really interesting because I think that in some ways it's a workforce development issue for social care, isn't it? Because you want to say you need to understand the implications of this and the roots to this. So you need to be recording it. You need to be saying, you know, that perhaps mother was not aware of, you know, it could be as simple as mother wasn't aware of pregnancy till 4 or 5 months down the line and was just carrying out like a normal lifestyle. So, yes, another campaign.
Well, exactly. And you know what was interesting? Because, as you know, I was in France over the weekend. Sorry to kind of go off on a little diversion here. It's not about my holiday to France. It's just about saying I was in France the weekend. And I was sat in a little brasserie having my Saturday evening meal with my family. And I was really interested to watch. There was two couples sat at the table about, I don't know, 6-7 tables away from us on the street side. And the both women were pregnant. And it was obvious they were pregnant. They weren't just larger, if that makes sense. And they were both sitting, smoking and drinking wine. And I just, my kind of professional head, let's say professional, but you know what I mean, my work head went on. And I was thinking, should I go and say to them, actually, you know, that they shouldn't be doing that? And I was thinking, well, number one, my French is all right, but it's not that great. So
bonjour.
I'm not going to be able to...
Je m'appelle Scott.
But secondly, I think we all have that obligation, don't we, to educate people. But it's how you go about that, and you know, who knows? But it that's the first time I've ever seen it live in front of me happening. There were couples that were enjoying a Saturday night out, but actually, you know, these ladies were pregnant and they were drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes, and you just think, has that message? You know, that message obviously hasn't got through to everybody yet. And that's really interesting as well.
I guess on a national level, and culturally, there's all kinds of issues, but also different nations have different different healthcare systems, different awareness, you know, and social care systems. So, yeah, it's probably going to be a huge feature of the future of our world anyway.
I think so.
For sure.
I have had heated conversations on social media with people who strongly object to the advice being given that there is no safe alcohol limit in pregnancy and therefore try to avoid drinking. And I think at one point it was suggested that as if you're intending to get pregnant, you start taking the folic acid, you know, in advance because it's something you need to be taken early on. If you're thinking of getting pregnant, maybe you could knock the drinking on the head in advance so that, you know, you're already not drinking if you do get pregnant. There's a surprising amount of resistance to that kind of talk. You might be really shocked.
No, but there's
quite a lot of resistance to that kind of talk. And I think there's an issue around autonomy, women's autonomy and women being able to make choices about what they do. And then bizarrely, someone said to me, well, stress is bad for babies as well, and a glass of wine helps me relax. And I was just like, okay. I've never been pregnant. So I don't feel like I'm really carrying on having this conversation with you.
That's right. We've never been pregnant either.
No.
But I think sometimes the messaging is quite strong. I think you'd struggle to meet a person in this country that has never heard anything about maybe drinking while you're pregnant isn't a great idea. But I think, I wonder how seriously people take that risk, how seriously people understand what the risk is. And also because I think there's a lack of information around how we can quantify the risk.
Yeah.
Like if I have a glass of wine, what are the chances that... I don't think maybe I'm not an expert, medical expert or anything, but I get the sense that they don't really know, actually, what the chances are and what you...
Yeah. And I guess that's all coming through now, isn't it, in terms of evidence of, you know, if you drink this many, I don't know, I know every case is different, but if you drink this many units of alcohol a week while you're pregnant, then this may be the result of your child. In the same way, you know, smoking has kind of, they've now evidence that, you know, 9 out of 10 lung cancers are caused by smoking, you know, that kind of thing. I guess as time goes on, we'll become more aware of exactly what the effects and in terms of ratios and what have you are. But at the minute, it's just we know that drinking through pregnancy causes FASD. In the same way that maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago, whenever it was, they discovered that smoking causes cancer.
Yeah.
But there was no evidence, there was no figures, there was no factual kind of information, so we're getting there with it.
Yeah, but then you've got, once, even though when you've got clear data and clear evidence and a clear message, because I think, like you say, Becky, there's a nuance to the argument about risk and probability and cause that often murkies what people are saying. But even though we know things are bad for us, people still do it. So within the the demographics of our, if I'm on thin ice, I can feel it already. But the demographics of our children's parents, that is a demographic that doesn't necessarily take heed of sound advice.
Yeah.
Hence us have being the pet, you know, hence them, those children being removed. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm just doing a thing because, you know, I think there's quite a lot of stuff out there that suggests that your sort of middle class people are fond of quite a tipple as well.
Did he tell you to bring that up on purpose?
Yeah.
I mean, no, I'm not. It's difficult, isn't it? Because you don't want to start to get into classist conversation. But I think,
not again, no. Thank you.
No. Heavens, no. Posh Scott.
She obviously didn't listen to the podcast where we discussed class. There you go. We've just unearthed an issue there. She doesn't listen to the podcast. Friend of the show, no longer.
I listen to some of your podcasts. Oh, dear. Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it? But I think, I will not continue that train of thought because I think it's going to get me down a rabbit hole. But I will tell you this. Back in the early 1970s, when my mum was expecting me, she was a little bit light on the iron. So they told us to drink a bottle of Mackieson Stout every day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a wonder that I'm sitting here talking to you now, really.
And
that's the thing, isn't it? There's a contradiction from that advice.
Yeah.
Years ago, yeah. And you seem all right. Well.
Well, basically anything that goes wrong in this podcast, I'm going to blame on that now.
Yes. Yeah. But, I mean, I'm still slightly shocked by your dislike of forced rhyme in poetry. That... No,
I'll never get over that one.
That's outrageous. Just outrageous. You know. Hey, Hope. Well, I'm aware that we've prattled on for an hour, so I think we should maybe call it a day, unless there's something you want to say. Scott, have you got anything up your sleeve, any topics or any, you know, any witty comments or funny stories? A surprise. No. Nothing.
Oh, dear me.
That was below the belt. Is that getting me back from my email? Yes, earlier. Yeah. I said, you don't care, but I'm going to tell you this anyway. And he actually sent me an email back, said, I do care. That really hurts. I was like, yeah, of course it does, whatever. No, I was just going to say, we haven't really had a chance to speak about your resilience piece.
No, you said resilience and also mental health. We haven't mentioned it.
Oh, yeah, there was... But we're on an hour. Shall we keep going or shall we save that up for another day?
Well, I would like to hear more about your resilience thing, at least. Right. And the mental health we can cover another time because, it does need addressing, but it maybe needs a bit longer than...
Right, okay. Really briefly, I had this epiphany in the shower about resilience, and I'm on this kick to kind of help adopters really get a grip on developing their own resilience. And I know there's a lot of self-care stuff going around, but I think that self-care is a piece of the resilience jigsaw. And I just think that more and more I'm conscious in my own life, and I guess that's another issue as well, how far do I extrapolate my own experience across all of adopters? Because I appreciate that I'm quite unique, but I just realised the other week,
and increasingly that I'm special. My mum sent me a letter. Dear Alan, you are very special. And she did send me a card with that on, actually, the other week. She just, yeah, I'll show you.
She just encourages it, doesn't she?
She does look that. Can you see that? It's a, there's a picture of my card there, of my mum. She says, to a special son. Anyway, yeah, just because I'm special. But I was just conscious that our life was just, I just couldn't see an end to things. And that's maybe, I wasn't nihilistic. I just thought, I need to really work out a way of doing this over a really sustained long period of time. And that might be 10 years, or it might be 20 years, might be 50 years. So that's resilience. But I've been putting them out on little blogs and things, and they've been really popular. So I put out a post. One of your posts got
1,600 views.
I know. Which I was just...
OMG!
O to the M to the G. And I just thought, wow, that just showed me that there's a real appetite and a real people are saying, actually, what do I do? What? How do I sustain this? Because I'm in tatters. I mean, there's some days I'm in tatters. We had to hide the sharp things at the weekend. Honestly, it was just terrible around here. It's just stuff that you just don't expect happens, and you kind of go like we're laughing now about the cutting off of the pigtail, but actually that's really crap, isn't it? That's a really big deal, and we're laughing now because like all of these things afterwards, they're just they're so outrageous. They're funny stories, but actually you go, is it what world is this normal? What world is this? How am I meant to pick the pieces up of this and make sense of it? And you tie a put a bobble around both ends of the plait and put it in a box somewhere. So I've been putting out these little clips, and I'm going to go on a bit of a roadshow. I think I'm going to York, aren't I? In July. Yeah, I'm going to York in July, but I'll get details of that. I'm bored of that. I'm bored of talking about me. No, I'm not. I'm never top.
See, I love it when you talk about you, because you don't do it often enough to promote what you're doing. But there's been a lot of interest in it, and I think because you're going to do the York Adoption UK group, and you're also going to do something in Essex as well.
That's true.
With me, actually. Sorry to say.
Oh yeah, sorry. That'll be a laugh, won't it? Yeah.
And I think we're going to hook that into kind of CPV as well, aren't we? So
yeah, I did it in Leicester, yeah, and I think it worked really well. But I was also like to do it maybe with in London with WAF, We Have Family, see if they're up for it, and just get. And I might write. I had even thought of maybe writing a thing about it, but like a proper thing. So we'll do that and get it out there. But then Doctor. The puppet master got cross with me. She said, "You do know that people will just steal it and use it, and then there'll be companies that we all know and love that they'll take it and then they'll use it." And I thought, "Oh well, it's true, but never mind." Anyway, that's a really glum end to the podcast, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? You really sold that to us.
Yeah,
I'm just completely disinterested. What I did find interesting about it was your comment about self care being a little bit of resilience.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot, I mean, definitely on social media, you see a lot about self-care and how it everybody kind of holds on to that self-care thing of, and I did see some tweets when you were doing the Leicester one about no coffee. I can't remember it was. But
yeah, we'll not be talking about lattes. Because I think that if your life is falling apart, a latte it will only get you so far.
Mm-hmm.
You actually need effective. You need to tool up. You need to get your knowledge on board. You need to get professionals around you. You need to get your head around yourself. So I think there's a huge work that we need to undertake in around adults as adopters having an awareness of our own attachment styles. The idea that attachment is a lifelong, adult life attachment through the life course around our own buttons. So there's a whole raft of stuff that I think we really need to access. And also, tooling people up to access support from other professionals. Because I hear the way people talk to the professionals, I think, you're just an idiot. You know yourself that in any job, if you go into your garage and the mechanic's tinkering with your car and you go, oh, you're doing that wrong. The mechanic will look at you and go, well, do it yourself.
Oh, 1-2-1, do one.
Yeah. He'll suggest that you do it another way then. And I think that we...
I think a mechanic is more likely to hold his tool out and say, would you like me to stick this somewhere for you, sir? But yeah.
Bend over, sir. This might hurt.
Yeah. Oh, God.
No, but that's the reality.
See,
and
I wasn't going to say that, no. Becky.
It's shocking here.
Yeah, it is. But I think that we need to really understand that social workers and teachers are exactly the same. If you go in and you say you're doing everything wrong, you need to do it like this. A human reaction is to go, whoa, back right off. So we need to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. We really need to come in and go, like, look.
I completely agree with that, actually.
And I hear some of the stuff I see on social media, I go, you ain't going to get anything out of anyone going on like that. It ain't going to happen. So I think we need to just be wise and actually make friends with people, because most people are doing their best. And you do get the odd idiot. You know, we all meet professionals, and you go, you're just off the scale. So you step over them and you go on to the next one. You use that NVR, you know, you dodge the bullets rather than catch them. So that is something that I think we really need to tool up, adopters. Because one of the issues as well is we're back to class as well, which I think is a really interesting issue. Because I think if you talk to social workers, we're trained to work with disadvantaged people. And we're trained to work with people who need our help in a different way to adopters needing help. Because as adopters, like if you go into a meeting, Becky, you will have read up about the stuff. You would probably have a pretty good idea of attachment and trauma and all of the stuff. So you're at least as knowledgeable as the person you're talking to. Well, that's a threat.
Oh yeah, well yeah. I was just going to actually use that word because I think my fostering, supervising social worker, who's lovely, I just think she's totally intimidated by me.
But yeah,
she's. Sometimes hasn't heard of the thing that I'm saying.
Mm. Yeah. So
and so I'm sitting there going, well, have you read this book? No, I don't know. Oh, I want to go on a course about this. Oh, what is this? We have these conversations all the time.
She's terrible.
I want to go on an MVR course. What's MVR? Oh, right. Okay.
And that's really, unless you're really robust as an individual, that's really threatening, isn't it? You know, she must.
Yeah.
That you're going to ask her questions that she doesn't understand.
Yeah.
And so some people, just their personalities, they get into conflict. But I'm sure you don't. But I do.
Someone may or may not have written on my fostering notes that I am belligerent.
No.
I don't know, it's outrageous.
It's because their fostering notes rhymed. No.
Yes.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that a lot of it sometimes comes down to learning and experience of being through those. So you know, like education as an example, you know, I've been there 3 times.
Yeah.
And, you know, this time I feel like we're potentially making more of a difference than we did the first 2 times because we're doing it differently, because our approach is different, our you know, body language different, everything's different about it. And what I find really interesting is that even though the whole school won't take the approach that we're recommending, actually, the Senko has been fantastic in engaging with us, and she's learning from us, and she's asking us for the strategies and things that work for us at home, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And her connection with the virtual school head is kind of saying to her, yeah, they're right. So she's more inclined to listen, kind of thing. So I think you're right. It's about how we approach these things. But going and banging your fist on the table and calling someone an F and W isn't going to help.
At all.
You're not going to get it. And, you know, it's not going to help your children either, is it? Through the rest of their whatever it is that you're trying to access. So.
Yeah, and I think there are warm bodies out there. There are people, and when I mean that, I mean people who are interested and bothered. And there's teachers who wanted to be teachers because they're bothered, and social workers who are bothered, and you need to find them and tap into that and become their, not, you know, friends, maybe too strong a word, but I from the very first moment I met my first social worker, I thought, I want this person to be my friend, because I know that you will do more for your friend than you will for your enemy, even if your friend's a numpty. That's the reality. If you think, I like this person and I get what they're talking about. So one model of adoption, one model of resilience is this idea about the abilities of an individual to access their internal resources and their external resources. So the internal stuff is quite clear. It's around your knowledge, your drive, your, you know, understanding yourself, your ability to, and that is an element of self-care. You know, that's one piece, that knowing yourself and developing yourself. The other is accessing external resources, and we need to become experts at that, because I'm a social worker, and I know, one of the reasons is because I know what I needed. I knew that I would need to know the language and the systems, and that was one of the reasons I got into it. But also, I know that people do stuff for me because they like me, and I've made friends with solicitors, and I've made friends with, you know, well, some people like me. It's all a facade. It's a facade. You're waving your hand. But I think that we need to make friends, with a virtual school head. We want to become useful to them. We don't want to just bring problems to them. We want to bring solutions to them.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. So, and we want to help them as well.
Yeah. Hey, you've done a great job. Thank you so much. Mm. That sort of conversation.
And we need to remember that sometimes good-hearted people are constrained by the systems within which they are forced to work. That sometimes the person in front of you is not being... It's not that they can't get what you're saying. I don't know. I was speaking to a teacher friend only last week. She's been teaching about 4 years and she's leaving at the end of the year. And the reason she's leaving is because she doesn't like the person that she's had to become in the job where she currently is. And a part of the reason for that is that she has a fantastic understanding of trauma and those things. She's got a background in youth work with very vulnerable young people. But the school where she works is overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. 25% special educational needs. Like she said, if we gave all the children that need to get out of the classroom a card, there'd be nobody in the class. You know what I mean? It's just not. But the school operates a zero tolerance policy, which she has to adhere to.
Yeah.
And she'd found herself, there's virtually no pastoral work. They're really understaffed on the special educational needs department. She had spent a good part of one morning speaking to a child who had been through a traumatic event immediately before, over the weekend. She'd sat and talked and sympathised with this child. But then later in the day, when the child was doing some disruptive behaviour in the classroom that was seriously disrupting the class, she spoke to him private. She tried all the things. She tried everything that she knew. But in the end, her only recourse was to either ignore this behaviour, allow it to go on, and have all the other kids shouting at her and saying, he's disrupting me, I can't do my work. Or the only sanction that was available to her under the system was to have this child removed from the room, and then that child gets a detention. Mm. And that's all that was available. There is no safe base available for her. There is no lovely inclusion room where a nice teacher will give you a biscuit to help you feel better. Her school doesn't have any of those things. So although her instinct would be to do that, she doesn't have the facility to do that. So sometimes the individual you're speaking to is themselves overwhelmed by all that's in front of them, that the systems won't allow them to behave as they would want to.
By it.
And running in and shouting at them for not doing that,
you can,
it just adds pain to their pain, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, sorry, Scott.
No, I was just going to say I think the whole resilience thing is, I'll be interested to see where it goes, Al, because I think it's definitely something that we all recognise we need to probably do more of in terms of finding our inner resilience and how we kind of channel that and how we get that out there. And a lot of it, I think, is also our own lifestyles and the way we live and, you know, all that kind of stuff that all comes into it, doesn't it? Because, you know, we talk about self-care, you know, it's lots of different things all added up, and I'm looking forward to finding that more from you.
And I think it's in some senses it's very individualised, and sort of speaking to a group of, there was 60, 70 people there, it was really interesting. You touch on stuff, but actually I'd love to be able to sit with someone and go, right, let's build a model for you as an individual, because I know that what, you know, your idea of self-care and my idea are just pulled apart. I know that if I can survive on 10 minutes a day on my own, that's all I need. I don't need to go on holiday. I'm not bothered on going on holidays. Whereas for you, that's something that you really enjoy, and it's something that you find... Well, no, I'm being serious. You know, it's a serious point. I have no desire...
I can go without them. Do you want to challenge me? Do you want to challenge me to a year and no holidays? I won't actually kill somebody, but if you want to challenge me, I'll try it.
So just give it 10 days. See if you can do 10 days. Straight run.
Shit.
Yeah, two full weeks at work. Go on, go for it, Scott.
Oh, you're evil. Oh,
I know.
The gauntlet is down. The
cat's claws are out scratching. But
I'm going to run in front of the Queen or whoever it is that's putting that badge on his lapel and say, don't do it.
Yeah. You've got evidence to the contrary.
I'm building my back before that happens, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, I would imagine that if, yeah, that would be interesting to watch. But I do think that I'm really interested in the idea, and I have seen I've seen a lot of talk about self-care, and I think, great, but it isn't going to get your child the support you need, and it's not going to get you, it's not going to necessarily help with your mental health long term, you know. That's why it's a bit facetious of me, and it's not in any way to downplay the importance of self-care.
I think it's true. Yeah, I think it is true, actually.
On that note. Well, Becky, it's been lovely to have you, friend of the show.
Well, it's been lovely to be here. I will just say, though, for the last 5 minutes, now you've sown the seed of doubt into my mind that I've reviewed the wrong book. I'm now slightly stressing. I've reviewed a book for you that I should, in fact, have been reviewing for somebody else, and that someone's not going to get their book review of Life Story Books for Adopted and Foster Children, or that I've potentially already reviewed this book for somebody and I've read it twice without realising it.
Yeah.
Which would be.
Is that why you've been looking a bit confused on the screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Because I just keep looking at the book and going, Have I read this book twice? Have I reviewed this book before? Hmm. I'm slightly stressed about that, and we'll need to go and look for a potential book about teenagers that you think you've sent me, because now I'm easily confused, it turns out.
Yeah, but what I'd love to do, when you next time you come on the show, would you write us a poem?
There was an old man called Al who
used to do a podcast with his pal.
Al.
His name was Scott.
He had a spot, and that's as far as we got.
Boom!
Do you know what? I reckon put a cartoon next to that, and that's publishable.
I'll tell you what.
Wow.
Put the Muppet Men on there, that's it. That's it. Just right. Sorry, doesn't it?
There was a young man called Al. Right, anyway. Well, thank you very much, Becky. It's been wonderful to have you on. And
it's
been a pleasure
as always.
Let's not make it so long.
Yeah.
And Scott, especially
as you're a friend of the show and you listen to every podcast.
Yeah.
And
as always, Scott, the pleasure was all yours.
It was not.
Not. Okay, right. Bye. Have a great week and have fun in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.